This is KCBX, Central Coast Public Radio, here on NPR One.
It calls to me to be where little cable cars climb halfway to the stars.
I'm Tom Wilmer reporting from downtown San Francisco, in the heart of San Francisco, Union Square. Right now we're with Spud Hilton. Spud was travel editor of the San Francisco Chronicle for the last 12 years?
About 19 years, writer and editor.
Well, now you're out on your own adventuring and discovering your own city.
I am. It is a little bit of an embarrassing thing. I can tell you a lot more about certain other cities in the world that I've visited and written about than I can tell you about my own backyard. And so I'm taking a little time to discover my own backyard.
I love it. So again, here we are in Union Square. Tell us insights about the name itself. I thought it had to do something with unions and longshoremen.
Well, that would make sense. I mean, the history of San Francisco is definitely about, you know, social justice, social things going on. So unions have always been a big thing here. However, that has nothing to do with it. As it turns out, it was the support rallies that they would hold here to get support for the union side of the Civil War.
And this was basically a sand lot at that time.
It started out as a big old sand dune. I mean, you know, you got to figure in 1850, when they first decided that it should be a public park at all, it was still a big sand dune, and there was nothing really around it, because guess what? 1849, you know, the city was barely a year old.
Well, let's talk about San Francisco today and the heart of the city. And Union Square as a neighborhood is an extraordinarily walkable.
It is. The word the heart of a place gets bandied about pretty loosely a lot of the time. And I don't always buy into it because you get a lot of people saying, oh, this is the heart of
London.
But
this literally feels like this the left atrium.
It really is. This is the aorta over there. And that's, no, I'm kidding. But in the same way that the Tenderloin, which we've talked about before, is more representative of San Francisco throughout its history, this is by far the face of San Francisco in many ways, especially to outsiders. So the things that you know San Francisco for, you're going to find here. The cable car literally goes across one border of Union Square. One of the most iconic hotels in town, the St. Francis, is right there. It's one of the ones that survived the quake, sort of, was gutted, had to be rebuilt, but it's still right there. You have on one side of the Union Square, you have, you know, the theater district. Then you go to the other side and you have clothing and shopping districts. And
let's dig a little deeper on theater district itself, because that's been a part of the heart of San Francisco for a long time.
It is. I mean, the Koran is, you can see the red sign practically from here. It's not that far. You can walk up Geary and basically hit any of three or four different theaters that are showing things that you really want to be able to see.
And then we're talking about live theater productions.
Yes.
These are not movie theater.
Yeah, no, these are definitely stage performances. These are
off-Broadway.
Off-Broadway, some of the Broadway stuff, some of the future Broadway stuff that might, you know, want to test here.
And how about Beach Blanket Bingo? Is that still living on?
Beach Blanket Babylon.
Well, that's it. There it is.
Exactly. You'll still find that. You won't find it here so much as about a mile that direction.
North Beach?
You know, over in North Beach.
And, but that's been a part of the city for, what, 30-some years?
Oh, it's at least that. I don't know the actual numbers, and they had an anniversary not too long ago. One of those things that, because they are constantly reinventing themselves, they're constantly keeping up with whatever the latest thing is. I mean, literally, if there's something in the news this morning, they find a way to write some lyrics about it and put on a new costume and get it in tonight. So, you know, that's...
So you could go back second or third time and...
Exactly. That's the point.
I know people that make a trip to San Francisco just to come and stay in a hotel in the Union Square area just to shop.
Well, those people have a little more expendable income than I do, but that's actually, you'd be surprised at the statistics for shopping. Travelers if I remember correctly, somewhere in the 40% range, 40% of travelers say they will shop on the road even when they have exactly the same store in their own hometown, because they, it's something they like to do. It's like having a hobby or something. And yes, that's absolutely right. There's numbers to prove that people come here and they want to be in this beautiful place, and they want to do what they love to do, which is the shopping, which is, you know, to my back right now. You've got all sorts of history. You've got the Macy's. You used to have the iMagnon. It's basically the whole Nike town there, which is, you know, like 8 floors of consumerism for just about any shoe you could ever want. Yeah, it's here, and people definitely do that. This is a really good place to do it because it is all walkable.
Maiden Lane.
I'll let you know a little secret about Maiden Lane. Pre-1906 earthquake and fires, Maiden Lane was actually probably the single worst red light district in the country. The cops in San Francisco would not go in there.
Wow.
It didn't matter if there were bodies. Didn't matter. The cops would not go running in there because you figured at least one person died per day. It was all cribs. It was all, you know, small brothels and things like that. And once the fire hit and that particular lane was rebuilt, how they picked the name Maiden Lane, I'm not exactly sure, but I think that was an interesting discussion that was had at some point in City Hall. You know, every city, you can have parks and you can have squares, and a lot of the time it's all broken up by the roads. You got to cross the street here. You got to, you know, fight traffic there. I like to look at cities that have lots and lots of pedestrian walkways. If you can get me a good pedestrian walkway, I can spend half a day either shopping, eating, or just sitting at a table at a cafe and watching people go by. It's great. I love doing that. Maiden Lane is one of those places that during the regular season, when things warm up a little, and you know how our San Francisco weather can be variable and expressive, Maiden Lane is one of those places where there's a few restaurants along there that like to actually just sort of put their tables out. There are lights crisscrossing it, so there's a very romantic setting. And on a nice night when the wind is just a little bit and the fog hasn't come in, it's actually a really nice place to get a meal and just sort of feel like you're in, again, the heart of San Francisco.
A little bit more about discovering Union Square area. Two things that come to my mind, this is personal, is Sears Fine Dining. Been there since the 1930s, and it's so nice to come to a place that hasn't changed.
Sears Fine Foods is definitely one of those places that help establish, oh, I don't know what you would call it, a foundation. There are foundation businesses in San Francisco that sort of, because they never change, they help sort of establish a personality, a character for the city. And Sears Fine Foods is definitely one of them.
It's just unpretentious, just classic diner.
And that's the beauty of it, is yes, it's an actual restaurant, but it is absolute comfort food, unpretentious diner fare that is good. And everybody pretty much feels they have to get the dollar-sized pancakes. I think you get a dozen or something like that. And while they're not quite a Morgan Dollar size, they're pretty close to it. So
you can eat a lot.
So you can eat a lot of them. You eat a lot. They soak up a lot of syrup, but that's what they're known for. But they have other great food, too, and a pretty good bar in there that I may or may not have spent time in. I can't remember.
We're looking across Union Square itself right now to the St. Francis, which is, again, an iconic, legendary part of San Francisco. And there's even a phrase that people for generations have said, I'll meet you under the clock.
Well, yes, and absolutely. The St. Francis is, again, one of those hotels. They're the foundation hotels, just like there's foundation businesses. You know, obviously the Fairmont, obviously the Palace, and the third one of that you know, triad has got to be the St. Francis. And it's got an amazing history. It's huge, and there's the large clock inside where here's one of these really elegant old school, and when I say old school, I mean like Stone Age old school lobbies where, you know, you meet people. That was one of the places where if you were shopping, if you were doing whatever, and you had to re-meet up, that's where you'd do it. The St. Francis itself, I love it, but I'm baffled by when they did the when they added to it, because the initial building is wonderful.
The new one, the 60s or 70s edition.
Yeah, new is not exactly, but I can't think of too much architecture from the 60s or 70s anyone would actually brag about to begin with. But
maybe that's why they hid it behind.
Yeah, they hid it behind, except that it's another 20 stories, you know, higher than the actual part. It is pretty heinously ugly from the outside. The baffling part is that around back, there's no windows. There's no windows on an entire side of a hotel.
You know why I think that is?
Why is that?
Probably right on the property line, and they knew their thought was somebody would be building right up to them.
That would actually make sense. But that said, you know, if you don't look too hard at the 1960s addition to it, and the 1960s addition to it, frankly, has those great elevators. They're the outside hanging elevators. You can go up in those and get an amazing view, you know, anytime. And at night, you know, this is a magical city to be in. There's only so many places from high up that are great to be at night that are open, and that, you know, those elevators are a great place to be. I would also say, believe it or not, for as long as Macy's is open, if you come to the Macy's Union Square, up on, I believe it's the 7th floor, there's actually just a little lounge sitting right next to the window that's one of the best views of San Francisco's Union Square you can have, and it's free. You're just standing in, like, the housewares department or something like that. It's a crack-up, but those are the types of places that I love to find is, where can I see something that won't cost me anything but will give me a great view most people don't get?
And Macy's is really last man standing in the old era of the downtown department store.
Absolutely. And even they're starting to do a little condensing and renovating and things like that. You know, Tiffany's has been on Union Square for, I believe, quite a long time. What's interesting to me is that at some point, a lot of the airlines and other travel-related companies were all based on Union Square.
American Airlines and it. Yeah, Pan Am. How cool.
Yeah, no, I've got a bunch of friends who all worked for Pan Am at some point. And the reason they're retired in San Francisco, other than the fact that, well, it's a great city, is because Pan Am was based big here. I mean, it was huge here. And everybody remembers working out of the office on Union Square.
Isn't that interesting? What a game change in the travel industry that every town did have their retail storefront airline store. How cool.
Yeah, it's interesting how it's changed in many ways. You know, once things like online booking came along, theoretically cut into the travel agents and things like that. But the travel agents had already sort of cut into the booking directly with those other folks. It all comes around, and I think you're going to find that in a place like this, the places that will survive on Union Square especially are the ones that either have great personality or some other kind of great reputation that people want to be able to spend time just lounging about. I mean, this is, after all, a square in somewhat the great European tradition. I mean, Europe's great cities all have piazzas, plazas, squares, whatever you want to call them. All the great cities of Europe have these things for a reason.
But this is one of the only ones, the true square in the city of San Francisco, isn't it?
This is one of the few. I mean, there are others that you can point to that you can either call parks.
They're more park-like, aren't
they?
More grass, rolling hills.
Yeah. Right. I mean, especially Washington Square is definitely a park. It's entirely grass and trees and things like that. That doesn't make it any lesser than.
It's not that European model you're talking
about. Right. And even this, you'd get people arguing is not necessarily the European model, but, you know, hey, it's about the size of a football field, and it's got some landscaping, and it's got great areas for people to gather, and it's got great areas for people to sit down and, wait for it, watch other people, which, after all, is one of the great reasons to have a piazza, a plaza, a square. And this is probably one of the reasons this is the heart of San Francisco.
And it seemed I remember ice skating here.
Yes, yes, there's ice skating here, and they're actually also instituting that during the winter up at Civic Center. But it's been going on here for quite some time. And one of the highlights of the year, without a doubt, is when they get the Drag Queens on Ice event that happens, I think it's pre-Christmas. And I'll tell you, if you ever wanted to see something that was a little out of the ordinary, Drag Queens on Ice is definitely something that you want to pick up while you're in San Francisco, especially if you want to get a taste of the San Francisco experience.
Speaking of that, San Francisco kind of invents character, doesn't it?
It kind of does. I mean, we're just an overgrown boomtown. At the end of the day, most cities were put where they were for a reason. We were put where we were because a whole bunch of people wanted to get the heck off a ship and head to the hills. So the only reason for San Francisco to exist was as a way station to go somewhere else and a place for people to sell stuff to the people who were going somewhere else.
And then second iteration, those who made fortunes came here and built their mansions.
Exactly. Once they realized that the weather was a little better here, you know, you had the robber barons of the railroads and you had the robber barons of the Levi Jeans Company, who basically made a fortune on that, all living here. And they brought the things that they had from elsewhere here. So we actually had an opera house really early on. I mean, we still had mostly wooden buildings, but we had an opera house at some point. And that type of thing was how a boomtown kept its, how should we say, characteristics, but still grew as a town into, you know, what you could all, you could call it a cosmopolitan town, but it's definitely at heart, it's still a boomtown.
All right. Final thoughts. You are still in the middle of a journey of rediscovering your own hometown. What is one of your most pleasant surprises or kind of reintroductions to your own town?
Well, I think it's got to be the Presidio. I think I'm still learning things about the Presidio that I didn't know, at the same time that it's having new things to learn about be created. I mean, it's rarely, there's almost no other city in the country where you can open up a giant area, you know, the size of a large island and say, guess what? You can now do something with this. And it's got,
I think too, is that transmutation. This was a primary military base, and now it's a whole different rebirth.
Yeah, I mean, one of the only reasons it was protected as long as it was because of security. I mean, but in retrospect, thank goodness it was, because this is an amazing area with all sorts of forests and trails and the golf course and all these things that could make it its own little town. I mean, we've kind of covered from time to time what an amazing place this is. Why I like it, why it's the big surprise for me, is because it's still changing. So I'm not just discovering what it was. I'm discovering it as it builds.
One more thought. San Francisco, right now, here and now, what do you love?
Well, I love that we are resilient and flexible, because I'll be honest with you, right now we're having some image problems. I'm not a shill for the city folks. I don't get paid by anybody. This just happens to be my hometown. But I would be stupid and a liar if I said we didn't have some huge perception problems and some real problems here.
They're very real. And I know it's out of your control, but if you did control the world, what would you do to change it? And I think one of the biggest problems, as I see it, is the homeless, the people on the streets, just painfully palpable.
Yeah, we have a shared experience with cities like Portland, Seattle, and Vancouver. And part of that is because we have a shared set of conditions, one of which is you're not going to freeze to death and you're not going to boil to death if you're homeless here. We have better weather than Chicago, but then again, who doesn't? You also have this situation where, because, you know, it's California, we are known for more liberal policies than some. Most of our policies involving human rights, quality of life, and homelessness are more liberal than others. Then you have the third problem, and, you know, it's not necessarily a problem, but all these things together created this, is that we have a higher cost of living than almost anywhere else, which means the number for what we call general assistance, welfare, tends to be higher in this county than in a lot of other counties. So those three things together are like putting up a giant sign at the front door and saying, for the love of God, please come be homeless here. I mean, it really is. And I'm not trying to be flip or irreverent about it, but the simple fact is that we have this perfect storm that's working against us trying to figure out how to have more of these people in better situations.
Spud Hilton, it's been a pleasure as usual to visit with you, and I look forward to our next installment.
Absolutely. I mean, I'm going to be discovering this city for a long time.
I'm Tom Wilmer, reporting from the heart of San Francisco in Union Square, where we've been visiting with Spud Hilton.
You've been listening to the Lowell Thomas Award-winning travel show Journeys of Discovery with Tom Wilmer, a featured podcast on NPR.org's podcast directory. Produced by California Central Coast NPR affiliate KCBX. You are invited to subscribe to Journeys of Discovery with Tom Wilmer on NPR.org, NPR One, iTunes, Stitcher.com, and more than 20 other podcast channels around the world. To learn more about Tom Wilmer's journeys around America and the world, log on to thomaswilmer.com.
Associate producers include Rebecca Nolan, Newfoundland, Canada, Molly Blaisdell, San Francisco, and Katya Singel, San Luis Obispo, California.